Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks, Pitcherless family. It's Brett Ford here as your host. Scott Chu here as our analyst, as always. And Scott, we're here to talk hitters. How was your week? How was kind of the tail end of summer for you?
Oh, not so bad. Not so bad. I still don't have all my voice back. Like, I think it's just gone forever. But otherwise, you know, going great. Took the kids swimming, all kinds of fun things.
Yeah, trying to get the last, we're trying to squeeze the last little good bits of summer out. We're, you know, going to get ice cream and going swimming and just trying to squeeze the last bit of fun out of this summer. I work at a university, so the college kids are already back. But my kids don't go back to school until after Labor Day, which is crazy late. So we're just kind of soaking it up right now.
Yep. My kid goes back on Monday, and everyone was like, "Oh, aren't you excited? You know, he'll be out of the house." I was like, "He sleeps in till like 2. Like, I barely see him during the school day anyway. So like, I'm going to start seeing him at about 3:30 in the afternoon, just like I did over the summer, except presumably he did something productive in all that time."
Teenagers are just a different species, man. We'll head to news and notes. We'll start with some injuries. Who's on the injured list now? And a couple of these are retroactive IL stints dating back to whenever their injury occurred. So some of it may be old news, but we'll start with Texas infielder Marcus Semien. He goes to the IL. Tampa Bay Rays infielder Ha-Seong Kim. Baltimore Orioles catcher Adley Rutschman. And then San Diego Padres outfielder Jackson Merrill. All four are names that probably otherwise I would be thinking about hanging on to. But with these IL stints, I think they're at this point of the season, they're probably all cuts, right, Scott?
So this theme's going to come up a lot. And a lot of it depends on how long your league goes, right? So some leagues take it all the way to the end. Some leagues playoffs just started, right? So if you're in one of the leagues where the playoffs are now and you're only playing for the next 3 weeks, none of these guys have to be on your roster. Not one. Right now, again, always use all of your IL spots, right? That would be my advice. It's getting to hold a guy free and maybe comes back earlier. and most formats now will let you drop someone straight off the IL if you don't end up wanting them. So I would say that's my first thing. But yeah, so if you're just playing for the next 3 weeks, none of these guys are so good that you have to hold for that 1 week that you might get from him, 2 weeks you might get from him. Now, Jackson Merrill started the season in that camp for sure, but we just never saw the power come back, right? Like, so we were surprised by the power from him all last season, right? Because it wasn't really part of his pedigree coming out of the minors. It was all hit tool, not so much power. And I just want to call him out because I do think he can rebound and be a very good player, but this is also the time of year we're going to see, and we are seeing, and we'll talk about young guys who are just pummeling the baseball right now, doing things that we never saw them do in the minor leagues, right? I'm not saying they can't be good. I'm not saying they're all going to end up like Jackson Merrill, or another example being Lawrence Butler, right? Those, they could be better than that. But whenever someone is doing something they've never done before and they're showing power in the majors they never had in the minors, be skeptical, right? Start with the skepticism. So we gave Jackson Merrill a long leash, right? And it hasn't worked out. We haven't seen it. Now he's hurt. It's a sprained ankle. So it's not like he's out forever, and speed was never going to be part of his game anyway. So he may not be out that long, but especially in a 10 or a 12 teamer, there's just too many options in the outfield to keep holding for a guy you hope does something. And, you know, we talked about Adley Rutschman last week as a guy we were willing to cut before he was hurt, right? So now it just kind of, it's in the same boat. I never really advised rostering Ha-Seong Kim, and Marcus Semien's been real up and down. Like, when he's on, and when he's off, he's just terrible. So, you know, even if you told me he was coming back in 10 days, I'd be like, well, if there's something on the wire, just let him go. Let him be somebody else's headache.
Yeah, Merrill was actually going to be listed in the fallers category until I saw the news that he went on the IL. He dropped out of the top 100 on your list for the first time, probably in a couple years. So yeah, that's 100% true on Merrill, and especially true in three outfielder leagues. If he's not already on the wire, he ought to be.
Yeah, which is painful, right? Because by talent, he's better than those guys, right? We've seen him for an extended period of time be better than those guys, but he's not that right now, and we're running out of time.
Well, speaking of running out of time, here's some guys that might be able to help teams that are looking to improve over the last couple of weeks, whether they're coming back from IL spots or if they were dropped by their managers who were impatient. So back from the IL this week, San Francisco Giants infielder Matt Chapman, Texas Rangers outfielder Adolis Garcia, Athletics infielder Jacob Wilson, and then kind of back from the IL, he's serving a 10-day suspension for chucking a bat at a minor league pitcher, Seattle outfielder Victor Robles. Did you see that clip, by the way?
I did. What a silly thing to do for a guy who's just trying. I mean, this at one point in time, Victor Robles was a top five prospect in the game, maybe top three. Now he's just trying to prove that he still belongs in the league. Injuries have been a big, been a big issue. I don't know what's going to happen with this suspension. It'll be really tough because if he is suspended for 10 games, you can't put him on your IL. And a lot of leagues don't have an NA spot to put him in. So we talked about him last week, Victor Robles. And I said, if he gets put in the leadoff spot, I'm going to be really, really excited. We got to see him in the lineup against two lefties where they presumably would be most interested in putting Victor Robles in the lineup. And he hit like fifth and seventh. Right. So I still think there's an intriguing player here, but I probably would be waiting to see what happens with this suspension stuff, especially if you're in like a move limited format, because if you grab him and then he's out for some number of games, you're probably going to cut him, right? You're probably going to let him go and you're going to pick up somebody else. And now you've wasted two moves that should have been one. So I'm very hesitant to grab him. If he had been batting first, I'd say you got to do it. Just hold, because this could be a really hot ticket to end the season. That's not what happened. So with Victor Robles, he's going to get suspended for some period of time. Like I think that's, I mean, if you've seen the clip, that's what's going to happen. We don't know how long, but it's probably long enough if you're in a head-to-head league to kill a matchup, right? Like the dead roster spot. So I'm probably waiting just a little bit till we have some inclination of what's going on with Victor Robles.
And there were also a couple of transactions in the major leagues, and I put an asterisk by these on our show sheet, because I don't know if we care as fantasy managers. So Atlanta claimed outfielder Jake Fraley off the waiver wire from Cincinnati, and then Boston signed Nathaniel Lowe after he was DFA'd by Washington. Are either of these guys maybe fantasy relevant down the stretch?
So Fraley is a no, right? Because I wasn't interested when he played with the Reds. I wasn't interested when he played with the Reds and was on the large side of a platoon, right? Like I just wasn't that interested. Jake Fraley is, useful in OBP leagues mostly. He walks about 10% of the time. But he's just like a streamer who runs a little because he was on the Reds. They just run, right? He wouldn't be doing that with Atlanta. So Jake Fraley's definitely a no. I think that's an NL only thing. And even then, right, they picked him up, but he is hurt, right? Like he's got a knee problem. He hasn't played in any of the four games that Atlanta's had since they picked him up. So he's definitely out. Now, Nate Lowe is an interesting one. I didn't think they were going to just release him from Washington, right? Like it was hardcore. Because there's still a good player in here. Like even like at times this season, we saw him be good, right? Not as often as we'd like, but he's not been complete garbage all the time. It's just when he's bad, he's bad. The walk rate's been climbing. It's up to 20%, 20.4% over his last 15 games. His strikeout rate is way down, 14.8%. Now he's only going to play against righties. Nathaniel Lowe is not going to see any left-handed pitching while he's with the Red Sox. But if you're in a daily league, especially one where you got all the moves you want, I'd be keeping an eye on that schedule for the Red Sox to see what kind of pitchers they're going to run into, because he may end up being a really nice like weekend stream for you where you're going to see like righty, 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 and they all stink, you know? So I recommend using, you know, I know we have on our side a tracker on, you know, who's expected to pitch on what day. So you can kind of look at it. You know, Boston isn't, they are going to face some right-handed pitching, but for whatever reason, it seems like in the short term, it kind of gets broken up. But I'm kind of looking at this coming weekend. They're going to get, well, no, the Pirates pitching is good. It's everything else that stinks. But yes, keep an eye on their schedule. Let's see, who are they getting from Baltimore? So that might be it. So Tomoyuki Sugano, Kyle Bradish, Ronzi Contreras, those three guys, Nate Lowe will be in the lineup Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then he'll sit on Thursday against Cade Povich. So again, if you're just trying to grind out every piece of stat you can get, right? Like you need anything desperately. Again, this is not for like the 10 teamers, right? You don't care enough, but in those, you know, deep 12s, the 15 teamers, and you're looking for any edge you can get, he's almost certainly on the wire and he should do pretty well this coming weekend. And it looks like the Red Sox do get a lot of right-handed pitching over the next, you know, week and a half, 2 weeks or so. So he'll play enough. So just keep an eye on it.
Yeah, not for nothing, going to Baltimore and facing three righties. That flag court, like you talk about how Baltimore kind of became a pitcher's park and then moved the fences back in and did all this stuff. That was on left field. The flag court hasn't moved. And it's still well within reach of a power lefty. So great call on potentially streaming Nate Lowe at first base. We'll take a look at some guys that got called up this week. We'll start in the Boston outfield. The Red Sox called up both Nate Eaton and their number three prospect in the organization, Joe Stinson Garcia. The password, there's an X in that first name somewhere. Scott, are you interested in either of these Boston prospects?
For this season in redraft, no. Because I just don't see the playing time. It's not there. And this is, I always feel like I'm such a wet blanket when we talk about these young guys coming up. But here's the deal. You got to play to matter, right? You can have all the talent in the world, but I mean, we saw it. We've seen it plenty of times where there's all this excitement about a prospect. He comes up, he plays once a week, right? And that's a waste of a roster spot, which you certainly can't afford to do at this time. So I think Eaton and Justinson Garcia are both going to be platoon guys. They sat, you know, like they're just not going to play. And the problem is they're both righties. So they're not going to play against righties when they can help it, right? So they'll use, you know, for no particular reason, Masataka Yoshida does get playing time against righties. We just talked about Lowe. So he, you know, he'll clog up a spot. You know, Roman Anthony and Duran are both left-handed, right? So they're not going to steal much playing time from them. Really, the only guy I think that could be affected by this is Rafaela, because he has struggled late in the summer to hit. He's a good defensive center fielder, which might get him to fight it off. But if they wanted to get Garcia or Eaton in the lineup, Rafaela is probably the one who could either get benched or, you know, maybe they just move him to second base more often. But he's kind of one guy I think that might lose a little time if he doesn't start hitting.
Well, we've got two more prospects that might be a little bit more interesting. Houston infielder Bryce Matthews. He's Houston's number one prospect, although not ranked in MLB top 100. And then Tampa Bay infielder Carson Williams also called up. He's Tampa Bay's number one prospect, number 24 in MLB's top 100. Are you scooping either of these guys for the stretch run?
You're making me do it again. No. Certainly not Bryce Matthews. And again, this is an easy one because they called him up and did not play him, right? So he didn't play. So I'm not that interested. Now, Carson Williams, I think maybe I've got some intrigue there. He was having a not great season in AAA. He is their top prospect, but he's striking out 34% of the time this season in AAA. He was only hitting 213, right? 97 WRC plus. And just an important note when you're looking, you know, we're about to hit September. Well, you know, we're about to hit September call-ups. We're going to get this flood of minor leaguers coming in. And if you want to know how good a guy actually did the minors, you have to remember that the hitting environments across the minor leagues are incredibly variable, right? There's hitter-friendly divisions, there's pitcher-friendly divisions and leagues, right? So use WRC+. It gives you a much better context on what exactly their offensive contribution has been and how it compares to other guys, right? So it helps you understand what that means in context. Because some guys will have amazing numbers, but it's like the Rockies, right? It gets adjusted for the environment that they're in. You're like, well, it's big numbers because they play in a bunch of, you know, a bunch of ballparks that are easy to send the ball out. So important thing to know. Again, it's going to be about playing time. The Rays notoriously mess with guys, right? Like, in the sense that they sit them sometimes, they play them sometimes. They, you know, they don't really always commit, right? So I think he should be the everyday shortstop. And he could do that. But so if you're going to add one, it's him. But even if he is the everyday shortstop, a 34% strikeout rate in AAA, a strikeout problem throughout his entire minor league career, you could see him be real hot out the gate as pitchers kind of challenge him a little bit, but it could turn south hard unless he finds a way to keep that strikeout rate down.
Well, you look at how successful Roman Anthony is currently. I mean, he's been outstanding. And I know even when he came up, we were kind of throwing the same wet blanket on him, but it took him a month. It took him a month to get to this point where he's hitting, you know, whatever he is hitting and just absolutely crushing the ball. But for that first month of baseball in the major leagues, he was hitting like 175.
Yeah. And it's a month these guys don't have, right? So Roman Anthony came up in early June. So there was time, right? There was time for him to work through some of this stuff, go through the lulls, win the job outright, not worry about what's going to happen when there's September call-ups, not worrying about, you know, some guy comes off the IL and they're going to send it back down. They gave him time. I don't know if we're going to see that for Carson Williams. So it's just, it's a risky play. It'd have to be definitely it's a middle infielder for me, and definitely not in a league where there's a strikeout penalty. So you points players with a strikeout penalty, Carson Williams probably isn't someone you should be targeting again, unless it's dynasty. If it's dynasty, everything's totally different. But in redraft, yeah, it's a big risk. I'd want to know who else is on the wire before I say, yeah, go get Carson Williams.
Perfect. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about Scott's top 150 hitters list, the risers and fallers after this. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. We're here talking hitters on pitcher list. Scott puts together the top 150 hitters list every week. And obviously we detail top 150 hitters in baseball. Every week we go through and take a look at the guys who have risen and the guys who have fallen from the previous week. And this week we've got some very interesting names on the risers list. We'll start out in West Sacramento, where Athletics catcher Shea Langeliers has moved up 12 spots. He's in tier 5, number 42 overall. And there's more than one catcher out west that's hitting home runs.
Yeah, so Shea Langeliers is interesting because so he went on the IL in June, missed most of the month of June. And before he went on the IL, he was like a back end catcher, starting to look like he'd be in the streaming range. Historically he'd been a high power, low average, high strikeout catcher. Not an unfamiliar trope. So what really changes in 2025, and there's several reasons for it that I'm not going to go into right now, but the strikeout rate dips dramatically, right? So Shea Langeliers struck out 27.2% of the time last season. That was an improvement from the season before when he struck out 29.2. That was an improvement over his debut year where he played 40 games in 2022 and struck out 35% of the time. So he's only striking out 16.3% of the time, which means he's just getting more balls in play. And he's always hit the ball hard. Shea Langeliers has always hit the, you know, his average exit velocities over 90 miles an hour, usually has a double digit barrel rate. When the dude hits the ball, he sends it a real long way. So what happened was that we saw Shea Langeliers hit fly balls just about as often as he did last year, right? And hit the ball just as hard as he did last year. Only now he's hitting the ball more, right? Swinging strikes have turned into contact. And for him, that's a huge deal. I mean, it's a huge deal for every player. But with how much we saw Shea Langeliers swing and miss and how he's not doing that now, just his ability to improve that decision value, even though like he technically swings outside of the zone about as often as he did before, the swinging strike rate is way down. The called strike rate is down. He's getting it done. He's getting his bat on the ball. That's all you need to see. So he has now shot up. He's the number three catcher on the season right now. He's been absolutely unbelievable in the second half. And you know, his strikeout rate is climbing just a little bit at the moment. But man, I was very skeptical of Shea Langeliers being a long-term fantasy asset before, mainly again, because that high strikeout average walk rate sort of profile is super volatile. And I thought you might as well stream a catcher. This version, as long as Shea Langeliers is striking out less than, let's say, 25% of the time, he's an absolute monster, right? It, you know, it's Cal Raleigh light. He doesn't walk, but he does everything. I mean, he hits the ball real hard and he's got a ballpark that is awful forgiving. So stuff that he kind of misses will still leave because he hits the ball hard enough. So yeah, Shea Langeliers, obviously he's not on your wire anymore. He hasn't been. This is more about what do I think about him for next year? As long as the strikeout rate holds for the rest of the season, there's still a whole month to go. If the strikeout rate holds for the rest of the season, he's easy top three catcher for me. And even if the strikeout rate spikes a little bit, he's certainly in the top five or six, right? The real question is like, where exactly, how much do I believe in this strikeout rate? Because sometimes strikeout rates don't stick around, right? We saw just two seasons ago, Ronald Acuña Jr. cut his strikeout rate in half. And then it went back the next year. It just went back. It went from like 20 something to 11, then went right back up as if it never, like as if nothing ever changed. So there's a little bit of risk there, but I think projection systems are going to love him. I mean, I think we're going to love him as long as he doesn't completely fall off the table in September. Shea Langeliers is going to be one of the first catchers off the board. Like after Cal Raleigh, it might be Shea Langeliers in a tier of his own.
I'll present an argument to you, Scott. There's another guy on the list who has had a meteoric rise who might be catcher eligible this time next year. He's in tier seven. Number 54 this week, up 62 spots, Ben Rice.
The feature. So Ben Rice was one of the most frustrating players this season. If you may remember, he starts out the season white hot. His Statcast page was all red, right? Whether you looked at ours on Pitcher List or you went to the one over on Baseball Savant, it was just bright red. He hits the ball extremely hard. His average exit velocity is 93.2 miles an hour. A good, just to help people kind of get some frame of reference, 90 is good. 92 and above is really, really good, right? And 95 or above as an average exit velocity means either you're a superstar or we're looking at a small sample, right? Like that's kind of the levels there. So his hard hit rate is crazy good. It's all legit with Ben Rice. But he was not getting the results for like the whole middle of the season, right? Like, so he starts out hot and then it just kind of stops. And it's the same thing that happened last year. Ben Rice was great for a month and then everything stopped. Like it was like he was great for like a month, month and a half. Then the brakes hit. And even though he's still hitting the ball hard, he gets no results to show for it. And it drove me nuts because I could not understand why. I looked at batted ball direction. I mean, I looked at batted ball distribution. I looked at quality of pitches that he's seeing. None of it explained anything, right? Just did not get the ball to land in the green or in the seats. So Ben Rice now is getting the results that the quality of his contact deserves. Again, by quality, very few players barrel the ball more than Ben Rice. Very few players consistently hit the ball as hard as Ben Rice. And now he plays almost every day, right? He may sit against the occasional lefty, but they've got him hitting second. They had him hit third today on Sunday. He hits fifth, and he has 24 games at catcher now. So he's going to be catcher eligible next year. Ben Rice is one of these guys that I think projections are going to give him a great season next year, because any of them that you stat cascade are going to see that this dude crushes the ball, right? Like, his ex-WOB was 413. That's like top 1% in the league, right? Like, the dude just crushes the ball. He's got the strikeout rate is down, right? 27% last year, just 19.8% this year. And it, you know, it's spiking back up a little bit. But like, when I say spike, I mean, over his last 15 games, it's like 22%, which is more than tolerable for a guy who walks, you know, double digits, right? He walks 10.4% of the time. So Ben Rice is a guy that if you're in a keeper league, he's now in the, like, if even in a four, like a four or a five keeper league, he's now in that conversation, depending on what you've got, which my philosophy on those leagues is always like, if the player doesn't have top 25 upside, then they're not a keeper. Because if you've only got four keepers, you just, you know, obviously pricing and all that stuff can make a difference, but let's just say it's pick, keep four, any four, you got to pick the guys with the highest upside. And starting with the ones that are already established, right? Ben Rice is starting to creep into the back end of that conversation, because as you sort of alluded to, I do think he'll probably, you know, I think as long as we know he's going to play, because playing time has been a problem. If you told me he'll play against all the righties and some of the lefties, it would be hard to keep him out of my top five or six catchers. So Ben Rice is a guy who, like, all of it's legit. That's the thing you need to know. All the results, right? I don't know why they weren't there early this season, because he's been hitting the ball like this the whole time. Everything you're seeing is absolutely legitimate. And he's been doing it for a while.
Yeah, Rice would probably, especially in catch in leagues where he was catcher eligible, I mean, 24 games of catcher, that should qualify him pretty much universally.
Yeah, it's everyone.
I mean, if he's getting everyday first base at bats for the Yankees, I mean, he's a lock for top five catchers just with the volume alone.
Yeah. And I mean, again, he may sit against some lefties, right? I don't think they're ready to just give up. I also don't think they're ready to just give up on Austin Wells, who, you know, isn't having a great season, but not, I mean, it's not like he's been bad, right? His batting average is bad, but he's slugging 420. He's a 2.3 war player because he's excellent defensively. So I think that the path to the full-time playing time is first base. You know, get Paul Goldschmidt out of here. He doesn't, you know, Ben Rice doesn't need a platoon partner. Just let him play. So yeah, if that's the case, if we hear over the winter, like, yeah, we plan on giving the reins of first base over to, our guy, Ben Rice, he's going to explode. Because what in the off season, we get time to look at all these numbers more, right? We get time to think about all this Statcast stuff, and they're going to see with Ben Rice that he's just been electric, and he's been doing it all this season, right? And he did it for most of the time last season. And these lulls that we feel a lot more in season, right? We don't remember that a dude had a bad May or had a bad June in the off season. Right? We start kind of thinking about their season holistically. So you have to use the rolling charts to get that context back. But more importantly, they're going to see just how good this guy's been all season long without being like, yeah, but he was so bad for me for a month, right? Like that bias disappears. So he's going to explode. I think if you've got him in a keeper league, even if it's only four or five keepers, he's got to be in the conversation.
We'll take a quick break. We'll come back to talk more risers after this. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. Brett Ford here with Scott Chu talking Scott's top 150 hitters list. We're down to tier 8, and we're talking an Atlanta Braves outfielder. He's up to number 68 overall, up 36 spots this week. Scott, tell me what you've loved seeing out of Michael Harris the past week.
It's actually infuriating. What Michael Harris is doing. And it's because he's done this to us like twice now, where We get so excited about Michael Harris in the offseason because he's got a boatload of talent. He can get the bat on the ball. He doesn't walk. He's an extremely aggressive hitter, but he has great athletic ability. He gets the bat on the ball. He can do a lot of great things. And he was awful, like, all year. Like, we had to start talking about cutting him in May, right? Even though he was picked as a top 50 hitter, we talked about cutting him in May, which is about as early as you can start talking about cutting a top 50 hitter. So he was bad all the way up until about 2 weeks ago. Let's just say starting in August, Michael Harris has just exploded. And now he's, you know, not only has he started hitting, Atlanta has decided they're going to put him in the heart of the order, right? Even with Ronald Acuña Jr. So Michael Harris, one of his other problems was that they didn't know where to put him. So they started the year with leadoff, but he doesn't walk much and he's kind of a streaky hitter even when he's on. So like, oh, we don't know what to do with him. So he would get buried at the bottom of the lineup, which stinks, right? Like, it takes away plate appearances, takes away chances, because this lineup, even at the start of the season, was very top heavy. It ended up just not being that good of a lineup for most of the year. But even if we thought it was going to be good, it would be one that was top heavy. And, you know, with Michael Harris, it's just really frustrating because he's going to give us two good months again. And then what? Right? Like, exactly what happened a year ago. Look at the rolling charts. I swear to you, spikes in August and September, just in time for us to push them all the way up our draft boards. It's infuriating. Now, for this season, it's great, right? The strikeout rate's way down for Michael Harris. Again, he does not walk, but he's striking out less than 20% of the time. He's getting his bat on the ball a ton. He doesn't hit the ball as hard as, you know, as like Ben Rice, but he hits the ball decently hard and he's got plenty of speed. So, you know, I don't know how often they're going to have him stealing bases, hitting fourth behind Acuña and ahead of Ozuna, but they'll let him run a little bit. And we're going to have a conundrum this offseason again about where the heck to rank this guy, because it's just so erratic. And again, that just comes with the territory of being a guy who swings a lot, right? And just does not want to walk. That kind of like up and down performance is just, you know, part of the game. But my goodness, does Michael Harris know how to time this up to give us a hard time in the offseason?
Yeah, he definitely feels like a Julio Rodriguez light, where just at the end of the summer, he just decides to flip a switch and turn it on. And it's for Rodriguez, it's gone on like three straight years now. And I think Harris is on a similar trajectory here.
Yeah, it's infuriating. And I think that's an okay comp in that obviously Julio Rodriguez upside is way higher than Michael Harris. Michael Harris's upside is somewhere around like the top 40, basically where we tried to draft him last year. That's around the upside for Michael Harris, with, you know, an extra year of data to show that he is slow to adjust to whatever it is they're throwing at him. It takes a while. When he starts hitting, he keeps hitting for a decent amount of time, but he's slow to make the adjustment. So I think it's hard to trust him above like the top 40 or so, but that, I mean, he's already on his way there for the rest of this season, which he's in the, you know, he's just now leaving the part of the ranks that are extremely volatile, since there's just not very much time left. For some of you, you've got like 4 weeks left of the season, 3 weeks left of the season. Even if you're going all the way to the end, you're talking about what, 5 weeks from now. So it's volatile, but he's going to move up a lot this year, and I'm just going to have to start banging my head against a wall to figure out where to rank Michael Harris second for next year. It won't be up at 40. I'm guessing, even if he's hot for the rest of the month, I'm guessing it'll probably be in like the 50, 60 range. And if he falls off again, it's going to be much lower.
Well, you talked about that volatile range of the list between, I think you said kind of like 50 and 100. We move down to tier 10, where another outfielder is sitting. He's up 24 spots this week. At number 96 is Toronto Blue Jays outfielder Dalton Varsho.
Yeah, so this is sort of how strategy changes towards the end of the season, right? So earlier this season, you may remember that Dalton Varsho got a bit hot. And I said, hey, look, he's super injury prone. He's really streaky. I'm not that interested in Varsho. Barely ranked him. at this point in the season, though, I don't care as much about all that, right? Because it's not a grind anymore. It's a sprint. And Dalton Varsho is the type of guy who can get hot for, you know, 2-3 weeks at a time and help carry you at a time that you may need someone to carry you, right? Now, again, he is volatile, right? It might fall off a cliff. You never know. But, you know, he's taken plenty of walks lately. He's looked great the last few weeks. He just hit a home run today, you know, a 3-run home run. Yeah, it came with 2 strikeouts, and the strikeouts have been a little uglier this season than they've ever been in the past. That is a problem for ranking Scott this offseason. Ranking Scott today cares about the fact that I've seen Dalton Varsho do this for a decent enough amount of time that he is worth slapping on there as your fourth, fifth outfielder, maybe even your third, if you've had some injuries and stuff like that. So, you know, get him on there. The speed isn't there anymore. Way back in the day when he was catcher eligible, we loved the speed. He doesn't do that at this point in his career, but he can hit plenty of home runs. Heck, he's slugging 580 on the year. So he can bring some power. Just expect it to hurt your ratios. You know, Varsho being a streaky hitter, I don't care about that as much. You know, as I'm saying, I don't care about that as much late in the season because there's only time for like one or two hot streaks, right? We're only going to see like one or two waves. So I don't care about how long is it going to take him to adjust because I'm just going to cut him, right? If he's bad for a week, I'm just going to cut him. I'm going to go get somebody else. Or if someone on the wire is more exciting, I'm going to go get him. And a guy like that might be, right? Jacob Wilson, who we started the season talking about as the rookie of the year. Now, he's unlikely to get that because he missed so much time. And because, you know, the wheels absolutely fell off for Jacob Wilson while he was healthy on the first half of the year. So he's just fantastic from, you know, like from March all the way through the end of May and into June, right? He was excellent contact hitter, but showing way more power than we expected, right? He hit a home run today that gives him 11 on the season. And that is more than he had in any season combined across the minors last year, right? Or the year before, right? Like his entire minor league track record is like 16 home runs, right? 17 home runs. That's it. That's all he ever hit. He's got 10 in 96 games this season. So this power's really come out of nowhere. But again, everything just fell off a cliff starting in June. And so I think a lot of people have had some tough calls, especially with how long he's been out, on whether they should hold him. So he may be on a wire or two out there. And again, we don't really know what to expect from him. But we know this type of player, this player who puts pretty much everything in play. Right? It's a 5.2% walk rate, 7.7% strikeout rate. He's going to be a phrase I used a lot early in the season. He spins the BABIP wheel, right? He just does it over and over again, put the ball in play, hope good things happen. And for 2 months, it did. And then for a month after that, they didn't. So, you know, he doesn't hit the ball hard. He doesn't do any one. He doesn't like, his batted ball profile doesn't have anything that makes you jump out and be like, oh, wow. Like he doesn't hit a bunch of line drives, right? He hits a lot of ground balls, especially for a guy who, you know, has some speed, but I don't think anyone would call him like a speedster. So with Jacob Wilson, you know, if you're one of the guys that kept him this whole time, I'd give him about 2 weeks. So he's going to be back on the list. He's likely to land in that, you know, volatile range, like around, you know, 75 to 100, because on one hand, I need to recognize that we saw a lot of upside out of Jacob Wilson and he puts a lot of balls in play for points leagues. He'd be ranked like two tiers higher, especially if there's a strikeout penalty, because he doesn't do that. He doesn't strike out. So, you know, we saw Jacob Wilson hit a home run today, Sunday. He's got some home games. I'm really excited about seeing him in home games, but give him like 2 weeks because what we don't have time for is these adjustment periods. And Jacob Wilson has yet to actually show us he can break out of one in real time, right? it's very possible that he's broken out of this slump or whatever Jacob Wilson had for the first part of the year now, because he was, you know, because he got to be on the IL. He had a lot of time to kind of think about what's going on, retool things. But we have not seen him do that in season, right? We saw him be good and we saw him be bad. And as I say a lot, I need to see how quickly guys can make that rebound, right? Because if that rebound takes a month, that's not a player I'm terribly interested in. If that rebound takes 2 or 3 weeks, you know, usually that's fine. That's normal, right? But when we start talking about like double that, you start telling me like, so you're going to be dead weight on my roster for a month, right? Like that's hard to hold, especially in these shallower leagues where there's a lot of quality on the wire. So I do think Jacob Wilson still has a lot of upside. I don't think it's the same upside we were talking about back in the start of June, but I do think there's certainly a top, you know, 50, you know, creeping into the top 50 hitter here, like, you know, a Luis Arraez light sort of, actually maybe just Luis Arraez, right? With more power. Cause it's not like Luis Arraez has been that good this season. I think that there's that level of play there. So we could even get up to 40, but with Jacob Wilson, again, what we desperately want to see is, you know, obviously just be good the rest of the season, but even if he doesn't, not letting a slump last a month, right? That's the thing I want to see. Cause we only got about a month left. That's what I need to see from Jacob Wilson. And again, some of it's luck. He spins the BABIP wheel. He doesn't hit the ball hard at all. It's only a 2.3%. He has more home runs than barrels, right? He has 8 barrels. He has 11 home runs. That's just the way it goes. So it's a slappy profile. It actually reminds me a lot of Matt Shaw, right? So everything I just said about Jacob Wilson is very, very, in terms of like batted ball quality, Jacob Wilson and Matt Shaw are incredibly similar. The difference with Jacob Wilson is that he's better at putting the ball in play than Matt Shaw is. Matt Shaw is good at it and Jacob Wilson is great at it, right? Like that's really the only difference. Neither of them hits the ball terribly hard. Shaw hits it a little bit harder, but yeah. Jacob Wilson, that was a lot of talk, but what we're really thinking about, you know, for this year, you put him in your lineup. If he's bad for 2 weeks, cut him. We're really thinking about next year as well. And if he was probably a guy in June, you were saying, this is one of my 4 keepers. This is one of my 5 keepers next year. And I think now the brakes have been properly pumped to say, like, let's see how this month goes.
We'll head back to Atlanta where we'll talk about one more Braves outfielder. Down in Tier 11, up 26 spots this week to 109, is Jerickson Profar. And Profar is a guy that's been hot, but he missed a ton of time earlier this season too. So
suspended.
He was doing he was eating stuff he wasn't supposed to be eating.
Yeah. He's also been one of the best hitters in baseball since the start of August, right? He's just been unbelievable. He's hitting the ball hard again. He's got eight home runs this month. It is very important to note that like, he was not good in July, right? Like this is real. I mean, it is abrupt. It is, I'm bad and now I'm good, right? Cause he hit 238 in July. And normally I don't love using these month, you know, using a month because it's kind of an arbitrary endpoint, but that also happens to line up with when he starts hitting. You have to remember in July, this is a super, he hit 238, 313, 396, right? He hit 2 home runs. And he did like nothing, or sorry, 3 home runs. And he just wasn't doing anything for us that was valuable. That is just a dude. There are 50 of those on the wire, right? I'm exaggerating a little, but only a little, right? There's a lot of guys on the wire that can do that. What he's looked like this month of August, is that out of nowhere breakout guy we saw last season. So that's really the question that we still have about Jerickson Profar. We saw him do what he did in 2024, right? Just be a different level of hitter than he'd ever really been before. Or at least that he had been for a long time, right? So now the question is, how often can Jerickson Profar tap back into that, right? How often can he look like that guy? We are now seeing it for the month of August. He carries it through the rest of the season. I start thinking that 2024 may be a lot closer to what to expect from him going forward, right? If he kind of falls off again in September. Then I start thinking like Jurickson Profar is going to be a great streamer for me at some time next season. And then I don't really need to think about him anymore. So that's how I'm evaluating Jurickson Profar. I know I just keep saying, well, if he's good in September, that means he's good. And if he's bad in September, that means he's bad. But the reason I'm making that point is because these are players who have done stuff that we've not seen them do before. With Ben Rice, I care less about how good he is in September because he just needs to keep hitting the ball hard. He just needs to do the exact same thing he's been doing all year. And if the results aren't there, I kind of don't care because I care about the playing time. Ben Rice was a big jump because of the playing time, not because he was doing something new in terms of how he hit the ball. With Jurickson Profar, I knew he had the playing time, right? I didn't know whether that playing time was going to be useful for me. And for a month, it wasn't. And for a month, it has been. So again, the more Jurickson Profar shows me that he can tap into the 2024 version of himself, the more confident I get in projecting him at something close to that level. Because you have to remember, this is a dude who has played 1,169 games in Major League Baseball, right? Jurickson Profar has been in the league. Like, he made his debut in 2012, right? Jurickson Profar has been in the league a long time. We have a lot of data that shows he's mostly a slightly above average hitter, particularly as an outfielder for fantasy. And we have one season where Jurickson Profar looks like a guy who must be rostered in all, even 10 team leagues, right? So I'd like a little bit more of that, right? 1 month this season, not like, give me like two more weeks even. And I can start being like, look, he was good more than he was bad in 2025. That's what I want to be able to see when I make my usually regrettable early 200 ranks right after the end of the season, right? That's going to be the thing I look at for Jurickson Profar, whether he's closer to like 50 to 75 or whether he's in like the 100 to 125 range.
Yeah, not for nothing, Profar also has 7 steals and 200 at-bats this year. That's almost as much as he's had in any full season, the most he's had in that small sample size since 2020. So he's running too, which is...
Well, everyone knows you peak in stolen bases when you're 32 and a half years old. Everybody knows that. I know when I turned 30, I felt, man, I've never been faster. Right? Like that. That's how I felt. I don't know about you guys.
we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the guys falling down the list, the fallers after this. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. We're here talking hitters on pitcher list, and we're going through Scott's top 150 hitters list. Scott puts this out every week, midweek, and we're going through the fallers, the guys who have tumbled down the rankings this week as compared to last week. And let's start in tier 4, ranked 29th overall, down 11 spots. It's Kyle Tucker, Chicago Cubs outfielder, who, before you put out the rankings, had a really, really rough week and then kind of turned it around this weekend. Scott, what are we going to do here?
Rough week. He had a rough like month and a half, right? Kyle Tucker has really, really struggled since really like the end of June. So all of July was not good. He hadn't really been good in August either. And of course, we get this news right before the weekend that he'd been playing with a fracture in his hand. And I think I got asked on the AMA a few times, should I be cutting Kyle Tucker? Right? Actually, it was before the AMA. I was getting DMs that were like, hey, should I be cutting Kyle Tucker? Like, what if he's not healthy again for the rest of the season? He's been dead weight. Got my playoffs right now. What do I do? And Kyle, you know, what I said was, yeah, I've moved him down in my ranks. Sure. 11 spots front, you know, going down to 29. That means he was a top 20 hitter for me. So moving a top 20 hitter down 10 spots when he hasn't lost any playing time really is big, right? I do not move those guys that far. It's usually a slow creep, right? So what we had to say was, look, Kyle, we know Kyle Tucker is a 30-30 caliber player, right? We saw it for 2 months this season, right? Like, he was bad for 2 months, and on the Fangraphs player rater, he is still a top 20 hitter, right? You know, like, that's like giving up to like all of June and everything in August so far, basically, right? Like, giving all that back, still a top 20 hitter. So, like, it was, you know, I got to give the easy fantasy analyst advice is, no, he's good. Right? Don't cut him. He's good. I know he's been bad, but he is good. So with Kyle Tucker, that, but it's that news, right? And it's so easy, especially when you are now hyper fixated week to week, even in Roto, because you're getting close to the end of the season and you're like, well, if he's got a, you know, if he's got a fracture, then, you know, I can't let him just sit on my bench for a month. I can't let him just eat all this. I got to move on. And the time is of the essence, right? There's no time. Well, if you read the whole article, it's that he used to have a fracture in his hand and that now it's better, right? Again, teams lie to us, right? We don't even know the medical situation in Houston for anybody. All we know is like, they're presumably alive, right? Everything else is the dude is like, well, he's a little sore. And all of a sudden it's like 3 months, like Yordan Alvarez. But with Kyle Tucker, it's like, look, I get it. He was struggling. A player of this caliber, the strategy for them doesn't change. Maybe you stick them on the bench because they're going to face a bunch of real tough lefties or something. And you're looking at the schedule and it's like, ah, he's been slumping and he's about to hit, you know, this isn't true, but it, like, let's pretend he was like, oh man, he's going to hit Scooble. And I don't want to start him for that game. It's like, well, that's reasonable, right? He's slumping. He's a lefty and Tarik Skubal is a god among men. So like, that's fine. But when you look at it, you know, just more in general, and it's not this very specific scenario, it's like, well, what are the odds? Like Kyle Tucker, I think now we have to presume he's healthy. He's got 3 home runs this weekend, right? He went over to Anaheim and just crushed the ball. So what do we believe more? Or like, what is more important? This news that he was hurt and is now better? Or hit 3 home runs this weekend, maybe breaking out of his slump? Because it's hard to speculate if a slump is because of injury. We saw his exit velocity dip a little bit, but not a ton over the course of the season. There wasn't any obvious sign, but now I would think, get that injury stuff out of your mind. That's not the deal with Tucker. Now it's, can he heat back up? And it looks like he's starting to. He's a guy who I would not, if he is even 75% of Kyle Tucker for the rest of the season, he goes back to being a top 10 hitter.
Well done, Scott. You mentioned Yordan Alvarez and Tarik Skubal. That gives us a hitters list. Hacks and Jacks bingo.
Yordan Alvarez expected back on Tuesday.
Oh, don't tease me. Don't tease me, Scott.
No, it's not me. Don't tell that to the Houston Astros. They say there's a strong possibility that he's returning from the 60-day injured list when they have a homestand against Rockies pitching. I have him in TGFBI. I am activating Yordan Alvarez against, you know, the mighty Colorado Rockies starting pitching staff. Because if anything is going to break a dude out of a slump and injury and all that, it's like those dudes in black and purple on the mound throwing you the ball, right? Like, no offense, fans of Colorado, but they're not good pitchers generally. And like those guys are bad. So, you know, Yordan Alvarez, I am activating him immediately. I know Nick has his thing. It's like, oh, I don't, you know, still ill. I don't start a guy right off the IL. That is not what we do with hitters. You get them right back in the lineup.
Well, we'll move on to the NL West. Talk about Rockies. This isn't a Rocky, though. This is a San Francisco Giant down to tier 5, number 38 overall, down 15 spots this week. It's third baseman Rafael Devers.
And I wish I had like something like, oh, it's the park. Oh, it's the whatever. Dude, he's just been not that good this year, right? Like, again, it's a disappointing season for Rafael Devers, who currently ranks 50th on the Fangraphs player rater, right? That's not a bad hitter. But for him, it's bad, right? His batting average is 20 points lower than we expected. Like, sure, he's walking more. And he's got, you know, he's got a decent number of, like, home runs, but it's just not the guy we expected. It's been mostly blah, except for this super hot streak he had back in April and May, right? Since then, especially like since the start of June, it's been a lot uglier for Rafael Devers. And that's what we're feeling, right? It lines up sort of with the trade timeline. Like, that's sort of the convenient timing to use. So if you go back to June 17th, when he made his first start for the Giants, it's just not Rafael Devers at all. He's still hitting the ball hard. It's a 93.5 mile per hour exit velocity, but he's striking out almost 30% of the time. right? It's a 227 average. Like, yeah, it's 10 home runs in that span, which is fine. 10 home runs in almost 60 games. Eh, that those numbers kind of work out to like a 25, 28 home run hitter. That's fine. But it, like, it's just not like the rest of the quality is gone, right? Which he's still hitting the ball hard. Maybe he turns it on, and I'd believe it if he starts getting better results, but it's been a long slump for him. And again, you can't drop it. You can't, you're kind of stuck with him. But, you know, if you're looking at some guys on the wire, it wouldn't hurt to pull them in if Rafael Devers runs into a particularly tough matchup.
Let's move on to Houston, where shortstop Jeremy Peña falls to tier 8, 73rd overall. He's down 22 spots. Scott, Peña went to Baltimore and hit at least one home run. So you know, Baltimore pitching kind of cures some things. But talk to me about Peña and why he's moved down in your ranks this week.
Yeah, so he was absolutely cruising. He moved up, and, you know, I'm willing to admit I probably pushed him too high, right? It's very easy when a guy is hot to see the heat, right? And forget a little bit about what they look like when they're not doing this. So I probably pumped him a little too high, but also, you know, he's not running quite as much. He's not hitting a ton of home runs, right? Like, his August numbers are mostly fine, right? It's not, you know, he hasn't shown that there is this new level of hitter. Like, actually, they're worse than fine, right? He's hitting 230, slugging 432, yeah, fine, right? 3 home runs, 2 stolen bases this month, fine, right? 6 runs scored, bleh. For a leadoff guy, right? 6 runs scored in 19 games. Like, what are we doing here? So with Jeremy Peña, he's not going to fall much further because he's leading off on an offense that, when they get Yordan Alvarez back, should be a lot scarier. But, you know, I think I overestimated what his ceiling really is. It's probably like a 20-20 guy with a good batting average.
We'll move down to our last faller. It's tier 9, number 87 overall. He's down 29 spots, one of the largest fallers in the list this week. It's Boston outfielder Sedan Rafaela. We talked about him a little bit earlier in the pod. But after kind of a breakout, what was it, July he had, and just an outstanding month, and then it's kind of fallen off.
June and July, right? He was great in June and July. July was just even better because of the strikeout rate plummeted, right? It was like down to like 10%, and it was great stuff. And this is classic adjustment, right? He makes a change. He figures out how guys are pitching to him. Pitchers start saying, okay, well, we better mix it up, right? And now they're ahead. So it's just been a terrible 30 days for Sedan Rafaela. It's, you know, probably his month of August is just really depressing. And I get asked a lot, can I cut him? And if you're in a 3 outfield league and you don't need speed, fine, right? I get it. He was hitting the ball hard. That has stopped. He's hitting the ball 83.2 miles an hour in the month of August. Not a great sample size, but it's not. It's certainly meaningful. He does have 5 steals, but that's about all he's really giving you from a fantasy perspective. So if you don't need those steals, say you're in a points league, say you're in like a 7x7 where steals is just 1 out of 7 instead of 1 out of 5 hitting categories, you can let him go and go stream someone who's hot. But, you know, obviously in deep keepers, dynasty, you want to hold, or if you really need the speed, there may not be a lot of other options out there for you, at least not until September call-ups. Maybe a speedster or 2 comes up. So he still plays, you know, he still plays every day right now. I think between second base and center, he'll probably keep doing that. Unless, you know, like Joe Stinson really heats up or something crazy. But yeah, he is droppable, I think, in the shallower formats. And if somehow a guy's like hit the wire that shouldn't have, maybe in a slightly deeper format, like a 12 teamer with 4, maybe 5 outfielders or something like that.
Yeah. It feels like if his hot streak had occurred in August or September, instead of June and July, we'd be talking about him a lot differently.
We'd be talking about him like Michael Harris. We'd be talking about him just like Michael Harris, if it had been then. But it's not, right. He hit 11 home runs between June and July. He hit 280 the entire time. That's the kind of player that he had shown us, and StatCast backed it all up, right? It wasn't like fluky, but it has come way, way down. Like, this is when we start to, like, his average exit velocity in August is 6 miles an hour lower than what his average has been on the season. That's when we start thinking, like, is there some kind of injury here? Something is very, very wrong. And so that's another piece of concern I have, because Statcast was all behind him before, and that has really bottomed out.
Well, that wraps it for risers and fallers. Scott, is there anybody from the taxi squad you wanted to touch on before we get out of here?
The taxi squad at this time of year is enormous, right? Because I don't know what you need. I don't know exactly, like, where you're at, what's available in your league. So I'm going to be covering more and more players. Fairly soon, the list is going to transition into more of a, here's the week ahead for all. I'll basically go through every team and say how I feel about it. Like, who would I start? Who would I sit? Looking at the upcoming schedules, because that becomes more valuable over the last 3 or 4 weeks of the season. Basically the same time Nick does it when he moves to a rest of season outlook, because now it's like, yeah, he's a great pitcher, but his next three matchups all suck, right? Same thing for the hitters, right? Like, yeah, these guys aren't that good, but, you know, Rockies, right? Rockies, they're about to go on a 3-series homestand. They will all be bumped just because, like, 3 series is a fairly significant portion of the rest of the season, right? It's like a quarter of the rest of the season they'll spend at home just on a single homestand. And that's not their last one. So it's going to shift to less of like a long-term, like, oh, these are guys that might be interesting, and more into of immediate interest.
Gotcha. Well, it sounds good. I mean, season's winding down. You got to take action now and try to climb those rankings as quickly as possible. So that makes sense with that shift. So Scott, before we get out of here, tell the people where to find you and your work.
Yeah, you can find, you know, everything I do right now is all at Pitcher List. You can find me on Twitter at If The Chew Fits, If The CHU Fits. You can find me on Blue Sky. That is scottchew.pitcherlist.com. I actually just posted a fun, well, not fun, scary graph of decision value on Jacob Marcy, who is, you know, a really hot topic. We didn't cover him here today, but his decision value has gone in one direction since he's been with the Marlins. And it's interesting to see how that's going to play out. So that's the kind of stuff I post. So if you want to follow me and look at some of those rolling charts of our fun pitcher list stuff, go ahead and give me a follow. And also this hitter list that we're just talking about, that'll come out on Thursdays, ideally early, but sometimes as late as like 2:00 Eastern.
Excellent. You can find me on pitcher list, in the Discord or on Twitter at Fade That Man. And make sure to check out Pitcher List's sister site for football, QB List, later this fall as well. My work will be there also. I would be remiss if I didn't thank Scott, if I didn't thank Josh Sperry for helping us out with this podcast behind the scenes. And we appreciate you, listeners, as well. Thank you so much. We'll catch you next time on Hacks and Jacks. See ya.